Good morning. You know, we're fortunate. We live in a country where we're free to have, you know, our United States flag and our Christian flag both present on our platform as we come to worship. You know, we live in a country where we are free to practice our religion as we see fit, you know, within some certain constraints, without interference from our government. We live in a country where we're free to proclaim that we believe in God, the Creator, and Jesus Christ, His Son. You know, we're fortunate for those things, but unfortunately, sometimes we forget that our government is not God. Sometimes we forget that not everyone has or had those same freedoms, and that while we feel safe with them, they're not completely guaranteed. And it's not completely guaranteed that we will continue to have those freedoms. In fact, in the last few years, we've started to notice that some of those freedoms are being eroded away. You know, sometimes it's this issue and sometimes it's that issue where we seem to think that we don't have the freedom that we're used to have. At the same time, we have to remember that we really don't have any room to complain. But yet we will. I want you to remember this, that as Daniel was writing, he was writing to his readership so that they would be encouraged to live for God in a foreign and hostile country. This morning, as we continue to look at the book of Daniel, we're going to look at one of those counts that's a very, very familiar. One of those stories that if you've been around the church for any length of time, I'm sure you've heard the story. If you want to turn to Daniel chapter 3, that's where we're going to be as we delve into the account of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But I want you to remember, this isn't a story that is just a safe story to tell to your grandchildren or your children. This story has intrigue and suspense. Now, I imagine that if this story was to be done by Hollywood, it would probably get an R rating by the MPAA. I'm sure they could do something great with the dying of the bodyguards. I can just imagine them almost melting from the heat or something. It has that feeling to it. But this morning, I want us to look at the message and to see what it says for us. And not just as a story to tell. Daniel chapter 3, we're going to begin with verse 1 and then skip down to verse 4. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set up on the plain of Dura in the presence of Babylon. And then the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning furnace, or burning fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Dear Lord, gracious Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day that you've given us. I thank you for your word that you have recorded so that we can know how to live for you, so that we can know your great love for us and know the response that we are to have. Lord, I thank you for accounts like this one from the book of Daniel that remind us that we are called to remain faithful, that we are called to be men and women who stand firm as witnesses for you in the face of everything that comes before us. Be with our hearts this morning to be attentive to your word as we come together to study this morning. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. You see, we live in an environment that is ever increasingly hostile to our faith. And we are called, we have to decide how we will live in our setting. We are called to live godly lives in a perverse and ungodly generation. And Daniel gives us the strength. Daniel gives us the encouragement. Daniel gives us the evidence that it can be done, that we can stand firm for the God that we serve. As I was looking at this and thinking about this, as I've been studying this for several months, I came to the realization that as you look at this story, we focus so much on what happens to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We pay attention to the fact that they are thrown into the fiery furnace, that while they're there, they're rescued by God and they come out, and eventually King Nebuchadnezzar makes a decree that no one should put down the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that we fail to see the story that brings us to that point. We fail to notice the things that it took for them to get to that point where they are finally cast into the fiery furnace. Because it's so much simpler to just tell the story of the miracle than it is to look and see what's taking place in the ordinary part of the story. It started last week as we were looking at Daniel's introduction to the book, as he introduces himself and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as four men who will be faithful to God in the little things and in the big things. That they were preparing themselves in the simple to be ready to stand in the difficult. They're introduced as men who want to worship and serve God. And it continues, as you look at this story, it begins, if we are going to be the witnesses that God has called us to be in this generation, it begins by standing firm. against overreaching power. You see, it begins when Nebuchadnezzar builds this, this statue, this idol in the plain of Dura. And we read this, and it looks like he's saying, everybody come to church. Everybody come to my church, and everybody come worship my God. But if you study the story, while there is some false worship that is taking place on the plain of Dura on the day that Daniel describes, King Nebuchadnezzar is a little more sinister in what he's doing. King Nebuchadnezzar is saying to the people, look, I'm the one who's in charge. All of you have been brought into my kingdom as exiles. And I've been generous to you. Because you see that it's the leadership that Nebuchadnezzar draws to the plain of Dura. It isn't just everybody. It's the leaders. It's those people like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who were chosen from the foreign countries that Nebuchadnezzar had conquered. It's these people that Nebuchadnezzar brings. And Nebuchadnezzar isn't just saying, hey, come worship my God. Nebuchadnezzar is saying, I am in charge, and I'm going to bring unity. And the unity in my government begins by everybody being on the same page. Nebuchadnezzar is checking their allegiance. Do you fall in line with what I say? And the thing is from the time of Nebuchadnezzar, you can go back in history, and you can go forward in history, and you can study the history of regimes that come in and conquer other peoples. And they all find some way that when they conquer a nation, they are going to bring people into unity. Sometimes it's by force and coercion. Sometimes it's by offering all kinds of good. But Nebuchadnezzar says, we're going to do it through worship. I'm going to take my government, and I am going to use my government and my power and to coalesce everybody. We are going to begin to worship together. And he sets up this idol of some kind on the plain of Dura, and he brings all of the leaders, and he says, when you hear the sound of the music, when you hear all these musical instruments beginning to play together and making this wondrous song, you are to fall down and worship. And Nebuchadnezzar is saying, do you fall in line? As I was reading this, I was reminded of what John sees in Revelation chapter 13. In Revelation 13, we're in one of those cycles where John is given the vision of what happens on earth in the realm that you and I live in. He gets the vision of what's happening in the realm of government and of peoples. And he gets then a revelation of what's happening in the spiritual realm. And in one of those, John comes in John chapter 13, and he records this of what he sees. It says, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads with 10 diadems on its horns and a blasphemous name on its heads. And the beast I saw was like a leopard. Its feet was like a bear's and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And it gave to the dragon his power and his throne and great authority. One of the heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, for he had given its authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it? And if you study this and you read what John is seeing and what John is writing about, he's writing about governments. Not any one particular government, to his first audience, they likely saw the reference to being Rome, the Roman government. The government that they were living under. And the thing is if you study that, you find that the Roman government at the time John was writing wasn't very conducive to Christianity, to the Jews. That they'd had some falling outs, and the government was going to force people to be a part of their country. And the Romans had been doing it for several generations. Since they took over for the Greeks, since they came and conquered the Greeks, the Romans had been by force forcing people to be a part of their kingdom and to fall in line with whatever they said. But the thing is it doesn't stop with the Romans. The Romans are conquered and the next generation, the next set of rulers come in and they force their will upon the people. We see it around the world today. You see regimes that come in, they conquer a people, and once they've conquered, they simply begin to take over and they find their ways to make everybody fall in line with the government. And Nebuchadnezzar is doing just that. He was looking to strengthen his power base. It's what Trimper Longman says in his commentary on Daniel. He says, "The one who in his pride had created an image with the purpose of assuring uniform loyalty." To assure uniform loyalty. Everybody fall in line, and we're going to do this my way. And we look at it and we say, but our government is so good. It brings us peace and it brings us freedoms. The problem is if we look at our government and we're honest, it's beginning to have and beginning to show signs of that overreaching power. And we are forced to ask the questions, how will we deal with it when our government begins to overreach their powers? How do we as individual believers, how are we going to stand? How as a church are we going to stand in the face of things like what our government is saying about the LGBT community and the issues that arise from that? How are we going to stand? How are we going to deal with those issues that arise? How do we deal with issues about the sanctity of life? When does life begin? Who has the right to choose when life ends? How do we deal with issues of sanctity of life? The government has some ideas. How do we deal with welfare? How do we deal with people who don't have what they need? And the thing these aren't all of the issues that we face. If you and I were to sit here this morning, we could discuss the issues that we face, that we believe the government is overstepping their bounds. But what I do know is what we face today is not the end, it's the beginning. These are just simple issues that we face today, but those issues will continue to grow more and more into the future. And we're called to stand against the overarching power or the overreaching power. We're called to stand for God. Miller, in his commentary on Daniel, he says, though their loyalty was being tested, it is clear that these people were actually being required to worship this image, something that no God-honoring Jew could do. Their loyalty was being tested, and to test it, they were being forced to worship this image in the plain of Dura. And Daniel and his friends said, no, we're going to stand because we honor God. I like what Jesus says in Luke chapter 12. It's hard not to like what Jesus says, right? But I like what Jesus says in Luke chapter 12. He says this, he says, I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who can kill the body and after that have nothing more they can do. But I warn you, I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who after he is killed has the authority to cast into hell. We have to make a decision. And Jesus says that, the government can kill you. The government can torture you for a while. The government can make your life on earth a living hell. But that's all they can do. The best they can do is kill you. Guess what? If you stand up for God, Jesus says, if you're willing to stand up for God and the government kills you, that's good news for you. Because the other side of the case is that you don't stand up for God and you die, and then you have to face the consequences of your choices. And here's the thing. You're going to live for 80 years on this earth, 90 or 100 if you're really lucky, or unlucky, I'm not sure which. But you're going to live for 80 years on this earth. And if you live for 80 years on this earth in some of the most extreme torture and that you could face, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the greater torture, the greater pain that you will experience in the life after this one. And so we're called to stand. And it starts by having an understanding what we're standing against, but it also we also have to have a realistic view of what it might cost. You see, we look at Daniel and his friends, and they're not just looking at things in theory. They're not just saying, theoretically, this is what would happen if we were called to stand for God. They're not saying, you know what, I think if it happened, I could stand up for God. If somebody came in this morning and said, do you believe in God? You can either say yes and live or say yes and die or say no and we'll let you live. And we could say, you know that I would stand up for God. Daniel and his friends are way past that. It's become a reality. They're standing on the plain of Dura and the herald says, when you hear the sound of the symphony playing, you bow down and worship or Nebuchadnezzar is going to throw you into the fire. Likely the kiln that was used to make the statue that he called for them to worship. Likely a kiln that could reach in excess of 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. That evidently was still burning. Evidently this statue was that new, or they were still busy doing something that they needed the fiery furnace to be going for because it was already burning when Nebuchadnezzar orders the commands to heat it up a little hotter and throw these men in. And so the reality was there. They had to think about the cost that they were going to pay. And if you just read the story, you just look at what Daniel records, there are at least three things that it could cost them, that it could cost us. The first one was prosperity. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had been raised up on the request of Daniel. They had been raised up to positions of some account within the kingdom of Babylon. We don't know exactly what. We just know that they were raised up. They were some of the leaders, some of the officials that Nebuchadnezzar was trusting with the carrying out of the rule of his kingdom. And they probably came with some pretty good benefits. I mean, after all, you just think about eating at the king's table. You know, they probably had access to the best doctors that the country had to involve or had to give. They were eating the best food. They had the best health care. They had, you know, they were still in the best of the educated. They probably had some pretty sweet flats that they were living in, provided by Nebuchadnezzar's dime. You know, they had it pretty good, and they knew that if they stood up to Nebuchadnezzar, there was a very good likelihood at best they would lose that. You lose your job, you lose your prosperity. here's the thing. There are times when we have to be willing to stand up and say, you know what? It may cost me my job, but is my job now for the next 20 years worth an eternity in hell? Jesus says you have to count the cost. Are you willing to pay the prosperity? There was also the fact that they likely had some good prestige. They likely would lose their prestige. You know, we all like to be known. We all like for people to look up to us. We like prosperity, and we also like the power and prestige that comes with a place of authority. And here they are. They're standing on the plain of Dura, knowing that not only are they likely to lose their livelihood, but they're likely to lose the influence that goes with it. But yet when the music plays, they stand. And these others who are probably in similar positions to them, probably ones that were overlooked for the last round of advancements, they're probably the ones that got looked over for that promotion that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got. And they thought it was their job, and so they're looking for anything against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And here they see them, and they will not bow down, and it's their opportunity. I like what Mark Mangano says. He says, the accusation implies ingratitude. One can hear the sense on the paraphrased words of the astrologers. The very three men you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon are treating your edict with contempt. How dare they? This ingratitude is a personal affront. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. They're looking for something, and they find it, and they come to King Nebuchadnezzar, and there's truth in their statement. These men would not bow down. But they interpret it in such a way to make sure that they get in the point that these men, king, you gave these men this authority. You gave them this position, and look at how they treat you. You give them this great job, and they won't even do this simple thing of bowing down to your image you've created. They won't worship your gods. What kind of men are these? Where's the gratitude? Where's the thankfulness? Oh, king, come on. You can't have people like this in your kingdom. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew. They knew that there would be the loss of prestige. And that was if they got lucky. If they got lucky, King Nebuchadnezzar would look at them and say, well, yeah, you're probably right. But they also knew what the edict was. And they knew. They knew that there was a very good likelihood that it was going to cost them their life. After all, the King Nebuchadnezzar had in the power of his hand the power of life and death. He had the power to kill Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego for whatever reason he chose. But yet Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they'd been spared. They had been taken captive from Babylon. They'd been spared. They had been put in power, places of power and prestige. They had been trained, and they had been chosen. But they knew that this moment, what had happened in the past did not matter anymore. And they were looking at it square in the face. And they knew that this was a matter of life and death. And they knew the threat was real. You cannot read this account in Daniel and believe that there wasn't right there in the background as they were listening to the sound of the music and seeing the image. They could not have missed the fact that the furnace was right there. They're brought before Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar gives them one more chance. He says, oh, come on, guys. Evidently, Nebuchadnezzar really liked these guys because the edict was, the minute you have this happen, if you don't worship, you're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar must have liked them, must have thought that they were worth his time and his energy, because instead of immediately having them thrown in the furnace, Nebuchadnezzar gives them the second chance. The second chance shows us how real the threat was. You know, if the threat wasn't real, we would have this long process that takes place. But because it's immediate, we know the threat is real. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego see the threat and they're willing to give up their life. They know the cost, but they're willing to pay the price. And so we see their response. We see how they handle the situation. They're called to be witnesses for God, and so the first thing they do is they will not worship. They will not give in to the edict of this king who says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make sure that everybody is uniform in this country. And so you worship. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego looked at this and they said, no, we won't. We will not worship your image, O king. And so when the music plays the first time, they stand. They stand in obedience to God and not to man. And sometimes as we look at the things that our government might ask us to do, there are going to be times when we have to be willing to stand for what's right. And not kowtow and not give in and not bow down to the things that our government says. They not only won't worship, but they don't give in. You look at verses 16 and 9 through 19. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. You see, the king gives them the second chance. He doesn't want to have to follow through with what he has said the edict will be. And so he gives them a second chance to show their uniform loyalty to him. And they won't give in. They won't give in. Longman says, he says, their courage is remarkable. They do not seek death, but neither do they shrink it. They refuse to betray their God, even in the light of the real possibility they may die for their stand. They don't seek death. They're not looking to be martyrs for God. But at the same time, they will not shrink from death. If death is what it costs to stand firm, they won't give in. They're willing to pay the price. And the response is this: we will live well and let God go on the defense. Oh, God can deliver us from your hand, Nebuchadnezzar. And he will deliver us. He will deliver us. But if it isn't here from the fiery furnace, we just won't serve your gods anyway. It's what Peter writes about in 1 Peter chapter 2. When he says this, he says, but I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the emperor. We're called to live well and live godly lives. And in the end of it, let God do what God alone can do. Let God defend you. Let God bring good from the circumstances of your life. Let God take your witness and magnify it and amplify it so the world cannot deny it. Longman says the three friends bear witness to the fact that even death does not defeat them. I love what they say because it's what Longman says. These three friends believe. They believe that it is better to die righteously for God than to live unrighteously in this life. And they believe that God will vindicate them in the life to come. If they die for God now, God will vindicate them in the life that is to come. Death is not the end, and death will not defeat them. Miller says that although no doubt existed in their mind of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego about the ability of God to deliver them, they humbly accepted the fact that God does not choose to intervene miraculously in human circumstances, even on behalf of His servants. God does not always choose to intervene. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew this, and this is what they said. O king, we will not worship. And if you throw us into the fire, our God might deliver us. Our God can deliver us. And if our God chooses to deliver us, good. But if He doesn't, we're still going to serve Him because He is the one who has all the power. And Mangano says this, these men were not uncertain about God's ability to deliver them. They were not sure that He would choose to deliver them. You see, we're not called to know for sure. We're not called to try to claim that God has to do something for us. When we stand for Him, we're not guaranteed what He will do on our behalf. But we're called to stand. We live in a country that is ever increasingly hostile to our faith and to the standards that God has set for His people to live by. But we're called to stand. And Daniel records for us the account of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and says, it is possible. It is possible for you and I who live as strangers and aliens in this world, who live in the diaspora of the Christian faith, it is possible for us to live and stand up for God. The great lesson that we learn from this account is what Baldwin writes in her commentary when she says, God delivered them and brought Nebuchadnezzar's decree to nothing. Though He can make decrees that are binding on this world, His power is far from absolute. Though our government can make decrees that we are supposed to live by, their power ends at death's gate. They have no power over the spiritual realm. They cannot do anything beyond the borders of the country that they rule. But we serve the God of the universe. We serve the God of the universe who has the authority and the power to give life and to take life from whomever He chooses. We serve the God who has the ability to free us from the torments of this life and the torments of the next, or to give us our wish and to let us spend eternity without Him. You see, we're called to live under our government, but sometimes we have to stand for what is godly. Ultimately, our government can pass whatever laws they want, but God is still in control. That's the message of Daniel. That's the message of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as they face the fiery furnace, is that God is in control. And while we may live under the rule of a superpower, God is the one with ultimate power. And we're called to stand. The only way we can stand is to make a decision now that when we face those calls, that we will stand. The only way we can stand is to be prepared. We looked at it last week. We talked about the fact that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were preparing themselves. They were preparing themselves to stand for God. And we can stand for God, but only if we prepare our hearts, only if we make the resolution today and prepare to stand, knowing what lies before us. Will you stand? This morning we're going to sing a hymn of invitation. We're going to sing "I Surrender All." And the question is do you really? Do you really surrender all to Jesus? Do you surrender all of the comforts of this life? Do you surrender the right to say where you'll go and what you do? Do you surrender your right to enjoy life the way you think it should be lived? Do you surrender the right to be comfortable to Him? Because here's what the truth is it's not always comfortable, and it doesn't always bring the best that this life has to offer to follow Christ. Sometimes it costs us. Sometimes it costs us financially. Sometimes it costs us prestige. Sometimes it costs us comfort. Sometimes it costs us energy. Sometimes it costs us emotionally. True worship always costs us something. Are you willing to surrender everything to God? Not just the things that are easy. Not just give Him lip service and say it. But are you willing to live it? This morning, if you need to make a commitment for Him, we're going to sing our invitation, and I would invite you to come and we'll visit about what that commitment is this morning. If you're ready to begin a life with Jesus Christ, I'd like to visit with you about that. If you need prayers this morning, won't you come as well? And one of the elders would be glad to pray with you this morning as we stand and sing, "I Surrender All."